This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to Your Turn with Mike Causey, brought to you by WEPA on Federal News Network. WEPA is the life insurance choice of over 46,000 federal workers and their families. Learn more at WAEPA.org. Here's your host, Mike Causey.
Hey, welcome to Your Turn. Mike Causey here, and glad to have you with us. We're going to have an interesting show today, and I can brag about that because my guest is Arthur Stein, one of our most popular guests and most popular guest columnists. And the subject couldn't be more timely, and that is, another reader gave me, it's having 2020 hindsight for the year 2020. That's not going to happen again. There are a lot of things as far as 2020 goes that we hope will not be happening again. Art, are you there?
I am here, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Thank you. And happy New Year. We haven't talked in a year. I mean, you know, where to start in this? Everybody, one of the dogs we're beating to death here in the news business is the events of 2020. But in some ways, there's just no way to overstate these or over magnify them. And I know it must have been an absolutely wild year. Not only for all of us, but for people like you, who not only have their own lives to live, but you are managing other people's money and portfolios and lives. What was it? What was 2020 like?
It was a very challenging year, and you know, it's also a year where I really felt like I helped my investment clients a lot because, you know, March was horrible. One, we're all justifiably panicked, scared, confused about what to do, what not to do. We couldn't go into work all of a sudden. We weren't used to that. We didn't know how we were going to handle that. And, you know, the economy didn't completely close down, but it mostly closed down. And the stock market, you know, had a significant bear market. It was down 34% in March. And it was just an awful time. You know, our policy is that when stocks are down a lot, we sell bond funds and buy stock funds because we want to buy low and sell high. And when stocks are way up, which has been happening now, you know, we're selling stock funds and buying bond funds, which means we're taking profits. And it wasn't easy psychologically, you know, it was a scary thing to do, but that's the importance of having a policy for what you're going to do when the market does crash or when the market booms. And, you know, it's something that your listeners can do for themselves if they want to. So it also this year, just from a strictly stock market and bond market point of view, and I'm, you know, obviously not dealing with the tremendous human suffering in the United States and all over the world. But it was a good example of how hard it is to, one, forecast what the stock market is going to do, and two, react quickly enough to take advantage of what has happened. And, you know, Mike, there was in your column, you know, you started off listing all the stuff, many of the things that happened in 2020.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was other bad news that you couldn't even include, you know, there is space limitations. You can't put all the bad news in there.
Yeah.
You didn't have like wildfires in California and Australia,
all this other stuff.
So, you know, if someone had known, you know, in terms of forecasting, you know, if you said to them on January 1st, this is definitely what's going to happen. Pandemic, 300,000 American deaths, economy shutting down, record unemployment, which is, you know, still pretty much true. Complete dislocation in how we work. And of course, all the political developments. You know, anybody who was trying to time the market would say, you know, I want to just sell stocks and stay out of the market. And that actually was not the right thing to do. You know, the right thing to do was to hold on to stocks in March, buy some more, And from the bottom early this year, the C fund was up 70%. And actually, I would say that the S fund was up even more. One of the big developments this year, as far as the TSP funds are concerned, is that the S fund outperformed the C fund by a significant amount. S fund was up 32%, and the C fund was up 18%. Now, 18% is a great year, but still the S fund, which invests in stocks of small and medium-sized U.S. companies, way outperformed. That's the first time that's happened in quite a few years. And the outperformance was great enough so that we're now, if we look at the 15-year average and the 10 and the 5-year average, I'm cherry picking here. Mm-hmm. But if we look at the 15-year average, the S fund has a higher average annual rate of return compared to C. But of course, TSP investors have three times as much in C as S. So S was something where, you know, we encourage people, our clients, to invest in funds that represent small and medium-sized U.S. companies. Patience was required, but now that patience has been rewarded. And what we've also seen is, and one of the reasons this is important is historically, the stocks of small and medium-sized U.S. companies have outperformed the S&P 500. And that made the S fund something that it was important to be included in the TSP. And it was important for investors to have, you know, some money in there. But they had to be patient because although the S fund did well, it did not outperform the C fund up until this year.
Well, you know what struck me
compared to the last 10 years?
What struck me again this time was, and I might point out that the S fund we're talking about, as you said, is small caps. That's about 4,500 stocks. That's most of the U.S. stock market. After the C fund, which is the S&P 500 or Standard & Poor 500, the 500 largest. So you're pretty much covering a waterfront with those two. And as you pointed out, the S fund outperformed the C, which is interesting. But what struck me about 2020 and today is I remember is in hindsight, particularly, you know, you don't know these things are happening while they're happening. You're sort of like the proverbial lobster in a pot in the cold water and they turn the heat up and you don't get it until it's too late. But I remember during the recession, 2008, 2009, there was genuine panic. The way things were handled was different, and in hindsight, I think worse. Thanks to the Fed, and whatnot, we've learned a lot of lessons. But I remember so many people that not only statistically, but actually people I knew who literally panicked, bailed out of the stock market, sold low, if you will, and bought into the G fund because it was, quote, safe. We can get into the safety of the G fund and what safety means in a minute. But this time around, and again, I must say I'm not as in touch with as many people as I was then because it seems like almost everything has tightened up under this pandemic. And, you know, people are working from home. They're hunkering down. So I don't hear from as many people as I did 10 years ago. I think that's a product of the times. But I think of that old line that I saw one time in an investment seminar. And they said, you're on an icy road, there's a bluff, 500-foot drop to the canyon, your car starts skidding, so you turn your wheels in the direction of the skid and lightly pump your brakes. Of course, the normal instinct would be to turn away from the skid and to slam on the brakes, which is wrong. And that's one of the things about investing that people don't realize is, and as you said, when the market is down, normally, if you can hold the line, that is the time to buy. And I know numerous people this time around who at the beginning and the midst of the beginning of the pandemic, they were regularly selling stock, regularly buying stock when it kept going down and down, and every week when it would drop 5 points, 10 points, they were delighted.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, as you've all, Mike, as you've often pointed out with the TSP millionaires, that's how they got to be millions in their account, is because when the market crashed, they just kept investing in stocks and they didn't pull money out. They put more money in. And over time, you know, they were rewarded. You know, past performance is no guarantee of future performance. But what we've seen since the beginning of the stock market is that the biggest determinant of whether you're successful as a stock investor, when you're in a well-diversified portfolio, well-managed portfolio, which, you know, certainly the TSP and fund indexes are, the biggest determinant of how well you're going to do is time. If you're in long enough, stocks did great. You know, over the last 20, the C fund has been in existence, if we're looking at calendar years, 28 years. It was introduced in the middle of 1993. So 94 was the first full calendar year. There have been 28 calendar years. There have only been five calendar years where it had a negative rate of return. And that's a pretty good ratio. I mean, you wish you'd go to Vegas and have an 80% chance of winning. You know, it meant that if you were in for a full calendar year, 80% of the time the seed fund was up.
If you're married, yeah, 28 good years and only five bad, take that.
No, 28 years, 23 good years and five bad.
Right, total. Okay. Eric White, our producer, wants us to take a break, so we'll do that here on federalnewsnetwork.com, 1500 AM. Be right back. Hey, welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here, and I'm talking with Arthur Stein. He's a well-known financial planner in the Washington area, and he is a former Fed himself, a professor at in Australia. He worked for the government of, is it Botswana?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
I was thinking the gods must be crazy, and that was Botswana. But fascinating career. He's been called up to Capitol Hill numerous times where he used to work, to help advise congressional staffers about the Thrift Savings Plan. And, you know, that's one of the interesting sidebars to me about the Thrift Savings Plan. And I constantly hear people who are unhappy with it. You know, it's not flexible enough. There are not enough options. They can't get their money quick enough. They want more socially responsible. I understand all that. But what many people don't appreciate is the oversight that this Thrift Savings Plan has from the Labor Department and the IRS and everybody else. Members of Congress belong to it. There's somebody out there with an $8 million account, and that's probably a politician or a former federal judge who moved in years ago. But when you see the way these things are monitored by the government and the low administrative fees, this is very hard to beat. And John Bogle told us on the radio show one time he would love to be able to get into the Thrift Savings Plan. It is very safe. That said, during the Great Recession of 2008-2009, financial expert that I am, I was, like most people, just sort of poleaxed. And I would contribute to my 401k here at the office. And it would go down, and I'd contribute, and it would go down. And there were times when I got a statement, and I believe it was less than I put in. I'd lost that much, quote, in quotes, lost that much money on paper, and I continued to do nothing, probably in large part because of listening to you. And one day I got my statement, my quarterly statement from the broker, and I literally thought it was a mistake. Thought it was a neighbor's because it had almost doubled. So I had unknowingly, I think, been buying low for more than a year.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the great things about this kind of investing in these index funds, the C fund and the S fund and the I fund, and investing in stocks in general, is that you didn't need to buy and sell at the right time. You just yes. needed to buy and be patient and buy and be patient and buy and be patient. And, you know, when you look at, of course, 2008-09, that was a worst stock market decline since the Great Depression. At one point, the C fund was down about 55% from its previous high. But for people who just held on, you know, compared, you know, if we look at an investment that started on January 1st of 2007, so very quickly got hit by the Great Recession, people who just stayed in the C fund would have had 64% more money than people who just had their money in the F fund, and 120% more money than people who were in the G fund. And you know, one common thing that I see with TSP investors is an over-reliance on the G fund for the conservative portion of their portfolio. I mean, there have been a few years, 2 years actually, where the F fund had a negative rate of return, and a few more years, I think it's maybe four or total of four, where the G fund outperformed the F fund. But if you look at average returns, the F fund has outperformed the G fund over the last 1, 3, 5, 10, and 15-year periods. That's pretty consistent outperformance. But TSP investors have 8 times as much money in G as in F. And it just, you know, it's those kind of allocation decisions, too much in G compared to F, too much in C, not enough in S, really cost people money over longer periods of time.
Well, you know, I think of the back when Bill Clinton famously said when he was being deposed, it depends on what the meaning of is. And, you know, people got a big chuckle out of that. You can make that same argument with what safety, what is safe. And I know when most people talk to me about the G fund, they talk about hard times, they're going to move into a safe harbor. The G fund is safe because it's treasury securities. The G fund is safe because it's never had a loss. And you have a counter argument to that. That I guess it's a different definition of safe, correct?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of times when people are speaking about safe relative to investing, they're really just speaking about volatility, Mike.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how and stocks are certainly more volatile than bonds by a large amount. I mean,
yeah,
we're not talking even close. And the S fund actually is more volatile than the C fund. But that's only one investment risk. And really, for long-term investors, the most important investment risk is losing purchasing power because of taxes and inflation. And that's where we see with the G fund and even the F fund, over long periods of time, when you look at, you know, purchasing power, it's gone down with those funds because they don't go up enough to compensate for inflation and taxes. But it's hidden. You know, because if you put money in the G fund, you just see it go up in value every year a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't sit down and calculate the purchasing power. And even when you're taking money out of the TSP and it's not buying as much as it should because you had too much in G, you don't even really realize that. You know, people are just thinking, well, at least I don't have to worry about volatility.
Mm-hmm.
They define as safety. And of course, the G fund, all the bonds are guaranteed by the U.S. government. And the F fund, I think it's around 40% of the bonds are guaranteed by the U.S. government. So there is that difference, too, in terms of safety. But in the type of index fund that F is, it's in so many different bonds, not only from the federal government, but from corporations, that even if one company goes bankrupt, it's not going to have a big effect on the value of the F fund. And you do get that outperformance. as a result. And it makes a huge difference over time.
You know, and that's the key phrase, too, is over time, because the National Active and Retired Federal Employees Association, you know, they've been fighting efforts to during the Trump administration to either whittle down or eliminate the cost of living adjustments for retirees, at first for the people under FERS, and then there was even some talk about doing it for those under the Civil Service Retirement System, you know, promises notwithstanding. And it sounds bad, but when you analyze it, as NARF has done, it's worse than bad, because you're going backward and over a 20 or 30 year retirement. And you can, nowadays, people can easily be retired for as long as they work. That loss of purchasing power is tremendously negative. And the one thing you notice in those charts put out by the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board, the ones where we get our famous millionaire guide from, which people love, and I love writing about it. But if you look at the breakdown, the commonality in all of the people with lots of money is that they've invested, as you said at the beginning of the show, for a long time, typically 29 years for those with up to $750,000, and about 30 years for those who are TSP millionaires. But they've invested for 29 to 30 years on average, and that they have almost exclusively invested in the C, S, and occasionally the I funds. But the stock funds, volatility notwithstanding, rather than the G fund and its safety. So it looks almost like a no-brainer, but it's hard to, and I don't envy you, because you're talking about people's money, but talking them off that ledge.
Yeah, and talking them off the ledge is a good way to put it. People tend to, panic has a very negative connotation. I don't want to say that, but you know, if you see the value of your portfolio go down 15-20%, and you know, you're going to be upset, and many people feel like they need to do something.
Yeah, you know,
I have to do something.
Excuse me, Eric wants us to take a break here, but we'll get back to that. But I think, yeah, panic is sort of a pejorative and a put down, because these people are understandably worried. On the other hand, they need to take the long view. But we'll take that after we take a short break here on federalnewsnetwork.com, 1500 AM. Hey, Mike Causey here. Welcome back to Your Turn. Talking with Arthur Stein, very well-known financial planner in the Washington area. And Art, I know you've got some millionaire TSP investors among your stable, because I've talked to three of them independently. They called me about different things, and one even did a guest column. But they follow you very carefully. How can people get in touch with you? And I know you've been teaching at Montgomery College from time to time on the Thrift Savings Plan, and you also do a blog.
Yeah. My website is arthursteinfinancial.com, A-R-T-H-U-R-S-T-E-I-N, financial.com. I do have a blog. I post things that are, you know, relevant to investors in general, and then things that are relevant to TSP investors. And I will be doing a Zoom webinar next month on investing in the TSP. And if you get on my website, you can sign up for my email list. And don't worry, the emails are not going to be frequent at all. I send out a monthly newsletter, and then I send out a few emails announcing that I blogged about something relevant to the TSP investors, or that I was just on this radio show by this incredible guy, Mike Causey.
Handsome, too.
And handsome, yeah. Very handsome guy. And on the radio, of course, as
yes.
I am.
Yes.
And so, you know, please do that. And then I'll make sure that you get the announcement when I do my next Zoom webinar. And there's no charge for that webinar. And of course, one of the nice things about Zoom, which, you know, I'd never used before the pandemic, is that people all over the world can listen in. And I find that people all over the world, when I've done this Zoom webinar in the past, do listen in. You know, it's amazing, you know, people in Europe and just all over. So that's nice because, of course, federal government has the most geographically dispersed workforce that probably exists.
You know, we had I hope we still have them, but for a long time there, we had a group that were in both Iraq and other parts of the Middle East, Afghanistan, and these were workers, you know, may have been contract, may have been feds, may have been CIA, who knows. But in addition to doing their regular vital, sometimes dangerous jobs, they were also keeping track of the things like the TSP. And this is important to them because they have families and to think of and futures to contemplate. So it's very interesting. In today's column, the Federal Report, I wrote the top, but Arthur wrote the vast majority of it. And as we say in the business, he did all the work. He did the math and the heavy lifting. And when charts are good, I love them. When they're not, like some of the ones in the New York Times that show the movement of COVID, they look like Jackson Pollock paintings to me. They mean nothing. But your charts are clear. They're in color, so you can follow the G, F, and the C funds, the ups and downs. But one of the things in the print chart you have in the first page of today's Federal Report column on Federal News Network, you're showing the index funds and tracking them for the year 2020, which should have been, and at one point was one of the worst years in history, and yet those numbers are just, they're astounding.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. And you know, we see that whether we look at the chart or the table. I mean, C fund was up 18%. The S fund was up 32%. That's a huge year. And that's a problem that people have when they try and get in and out of the market, that if you miss those good years or the good part of the year, you've missed it forever. You don't get that back. You don't get that opportunity back. And what we saw this year was how extraordinarily quickly the market can move. I mean, in March, we were, at the beginning of March, still in the longest bear market in history, a bull market in history,
right.
Which means the longest rise in stock prices without a fall of 20% or more.
11 good years, and, right?
Yeah, 11 great years.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, it was down 34% in an extremely short period of time, a matter of weeks. And actually, that was historically fast. And so then it was down 34%. And you know, it would not have been surprising if it continued down, you know, to where it was down 50 or even 60%, because, you know, the economy was closed down. I mean, it was hard to imagine a worse environment for investing in stocks. But it didn't. All of a sudden, it was up, you know, 70% by the end of the year, but it became another bull market, again, in record time. It was up 20%. And, you know, it was volatile on the way up, but it just kept going up to where it was up 18% at the end of the year. And the S fund, you know, was up 32% at the end of the year. So if you missed out, if you didn't get your money out in time to miss the bear market, and I would say most people did not get their money out in time, but if you did, you had to get it back in very quickly.
You have to be right twice, correct?
You have to. And that second time, when to put your money back in, that's the most difficult decision because, you know, look at it. It's the end of March, pandemic. Nobody knows when a vaccine is going to be available, how many people will live or die, when the economy is going to start opening up. And you weren't going to put your money back in the stock market it was only down 34%. You know, anybody would have expected to go down more, but then all of a sudden it was up. And then people don't want to put their money back in because, well, hey, it's up 20%. It's probably going to go down again, but it didn't. It just kept going up.
Well, and during after the Great Recession, which started ending in March of 2009, it started going great guns, better than anybody anticipated. But people kept saying, "Yeah, but it's got to correct again," and it did. That's true. And normally, you point to a couple of corrections a year. This one did that, but it was still up and it was up and down, but mostly upward trajectory. But at the time, putting yourself back in that, when you're looking at the gloomy 6 p.m., 7 p.m. news, and your portfolio arrives and what that, it's very hard to turn that wheel on the icy road in the direction of the skid.
Yeah, it's so much easier just to leave your money invested.
You don't
have to make those decisions.
Would you do your yo-yo example for us? Because I one of my grandsons is very much interested in financial planning and he wants to intern for somebody and learn this. And I told him the yo-yo thing and we were looking at a chart and it really impressed him as it did me.
Oh, I'm glad I impressed your grandson. Yep. How old is he?
He's 18. 18 going on 35. Good. Yeah.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. Okay. My example is the stock market's like a yo-yo going up and down and up and down. But it's like that situation, only the person holding, you know, who's controlling the yo-yo is walking up a hill. Mm-hmm. And at a certain point, that person's so far up the hill that even when the yo-yo is at its lowest point, it's still higher than it was at its highest point further down the hill. And next month, maybe I'll do that as a graph.
That'd be
and
wonderful.
Show that.
Well, go ahead.
And again, it's just time. It's time in the market. Not market timing.
Yeah. A friend of mine who was a financial planner, still is, and he had a nice long chart, you know, 6 feet long, and it showed this U.S. stock market from beginning until that current time. I think that was in the early 2000s. And it showed, you know, the market, and it was Art Stein's yo-yo. It was up and down, but mostly up. And even the period during the Great Depression, which was horrible if you lived through it and had to depend on it and whatnot, but even that's just a blip on the radar compared to the overall rise of the market. And Eric wants us to get a rise and get out of here briefly, so we're going to do that here on federalnewsnetwork.com, 1500 AM, and then be right back. Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey here. I'm talking with Arthur Stein, well-known financial planner in the Washington area. Got several TSP millionaires among his clientele. He's taught at in Australia. Now, Art, I always get this wrong. Was it University of Queensland?
No. It was in Perth.
Perth, okay.
And in the
West.
It was called Murdoch University.
Okay.
It was a new university where
over
I
in
spoke.
The West, right.
Taught.
And
I was on the West Coast.
Right. And I love it, too. You worked for the government of Botswana, which was really interesting. But this this investing, what do they talk about? Fear and greed are driving the forces of the market. And I used to think that was a little flippant and whatnot. But some people, instead of making an investment, they really are gambling, I guess, with their money by guessing peaks and guessing valleys and timing their sales. And as you pointed out, the tough decision is to sell. The even tougher one is to come back into the market.
Yeah, very difficult. And people are doing that are really speculating, and which is, I suppose, a type of investing, but it's not the kind of thing that most people do or want to do or can do or able to do. And as a matter of fact, most of the people who do it, I would say close to all the people that do it don't really do it successfully in terms of just outperforming the indexes, especially when you take into account all the expenses of trading and taxes and time. So, you know, the day trading, which again is popular again, because now there are websites that really encourage people to get on and buy and sell, you know, a lot. And that's become very popular again. And, you know, are they going to outperform? And the other question is, would they even know if they did outperform? Because most people who do speculation and day trading, unless they're, you know, part of a hedge fund or something, don't really know their rate of return. So it makes it hard to tell if you're successful. Usually when I ask people like that, well, what's your rate of return? They don't know. But if they feel like they have more money than they started with, they feel like they're successful, which is a pretty low bar. Successful to me would be, well, you know, in 2020, I had a return that was higher than the C fund and the S fund. Well, if you did that and you actually did that, that's pretty impressive.
Well, I had a couple of friends that were talking about in March of 2020, and this was just before the bottom fell out, the 11-year-long bull market ended. But this is just about that time, and a couple of them, in a modest way, were boasting that they had gotten out in time. And it appeared to be that way because I think they sold at the 1st of March, maybe it was a quarterly kind of deal or something, and then the market went down March 19th or 9th or something like that. And, you know, as you and others have pointed out, it was long overdue for a correction, a significant correction, and it happened. And these guys were, without being smug, they were quite happy with themselves because they had sold high, they thought. And then it turned around. I guess it was the shortest. Was it the shortest major bear market in history so far?
Yes.
Okay. I mean, that, you know, these figures, the longest followed by the shortest, which means the bull market has started again. So far, correct?
Yeah.
Well, I had a friend at the Washington Post at one point. They let us pull out X amount of money from our then 401ks, and he was a financial person. He was an accountant, one of the smartest, nicest people I've ever known. But he got into this kind of target fixation, and I took my money and I made some kind of silly investments, some sector investments in South America and that sort of thing. But mostly they came out all right. But in his case, he took courses. He went to a thing in Toronto, a special school, and he took courses here. And he finally bought a second computer and a machine, I quote, a machine that told him when to buy and when to sell. And when the arrow went green, he would sell, or I'm sorry, he would buy. And when the arrow pointed down and it was red, he would sell. Now, those are pretty good indicators, except did the machine know what he was talking about? And the short answer is no. I made a little bit of money. He lost everything he had.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, I've certainly heard stories like that before. And, you know, it's just so unnecessary. Now, I do know people who take a small amount of their investments and decide that they are going to do that, speculate with it, and try and pick sectors and things like that. And, you know, if they get it right, just I think it's really more than luck. Like if you happen to have invested in Tesla.
Well, mine, I remember at that time with my friend, I bought an Irish sector stock, the Celtic Tiger or something, and it was, you know, national pride and all that. And it turns out it did very well, but I didn't have a clue as to why it did well or why it should do well and what could have happened. And I also bought a fund in South America that did not do quite so well. So it's just so much emotion involved.
Yeah. And it's just difficult, and it's not necessary. And if you're doing it with a small amount of your investments because you enjoy it, that's fine. But the other thing about it is you really need to spend a lot of time on it.
Yeah.
Because more narrow the investment, the more you have to watch it to make sure that that sector is not turning on you. And energy stocks are a good example.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for a long time, energy stocks were just rock solid. Exxon was, for some period of time, the largest company in the United States. And
yep.
There were all these other companies. Well, now they just got tanked. I mean, you know, they've done horribly.
Well,
and it's just the world changed.
Yeah, and the of the S&P 500, a lot of the stocks are not doing well at all, but there are three or four big ones, Tesla and people like that, that are going gangbusters. But how dangerous is that?
Well, I've read a lot about that. Mm-hmm. And it's not unusual that there are five or six or even 10 stocks that make up the majority or
okay.
a big portion of the index.
Didn't think of that.
Or a big portion of the gains. And so I'm not sure how unusual that is. And certainly when you look at companies like Apple and Microsoft and Alphabet, those are pretty solid companies. They may be overvalued. But they have a great business.
Good business. You're right. Eric White says we got about 60 seconds. Can you kind of sum up?
I believe in long-term investing. I think that if you're in the TSP, make sure you're diversified into your bond investments are not just the G fund, but also the F fund, and that your only stock investment is not just the C fund, but also that you have money in S and even I, although I's done very poorly for a long time, but from historically that would indicate that there's a good chance it'll do well in the future.
Yeah, could well be on sale. And I urge people to take a look at the Federal Report today. The headline is the year 2020, what happened? So what actually happened? And I hope people will look at it because Arthur Stein wrote most of it and his charts, as always, are superb and really tell you the story. And when you look at these numbers, you can't argue with them, the current numbers and the numbers over time. And certainly well worth doing and a thing that can calm you down when times get trouble. So thank you, Art, for being with us. Thanks, Eric, for working the board. Hope you all have a very good and safe week. Hope to see you back here next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Stay safe.
You've been listening to Your Turn with Mike Causey, brought to you by WEPA on Federal News Network. WEPA is the life insurance choice of over 46,000 federal workers and their families. Learn more at weepa.org.